Welcome to a special edition of Path to Zero, the podcast about clean energy and the journey toward a low-carbon future. We've traveled to New York City to take part in Climate Week conversations. Now, here's your host, Tucker Perkins.
One of the topics I find most interesting in the energy transition discussion is how to decarbonize the transportation sector. That's why I'm especially excited to speak with our guest for this Climate Week episode of Path to Zero. Dr. Rachel Moncrief is the Acting Executive Director for the International Council on Clean Transportation. Rachel, thanks so much for being with us at Climate Week and on the Path to Zero podcast.
And thank you very much for having me.
Looking forward to talking about, you know, so much about what you've done. I probably need to throw in a Go Canes for you. I know you're a fantastic graduate of the University of Miami, one of my ACC friends.
Yeah.
But let's start by talking about the International Council on Clean Transportation.
Sure, yes.
What does it do? What's going on there?
So the ICT, we're an international nonprofit organization. We're very mission-driven, and we just have the very simple mission of basically eliminating the climate and health impacts from the global transportation sector. So it sounds simple, but really what we focus on is technical work to support really good, sound policymaking at all levels of government, and to ensure that the sort of like the newest and the cleanest and the best technologies are coming into the fleet.
And you're really looking, I mean, we say transportation and sometimes people narrowly, but you're everything from on-road,
yep,
light duty all the way to heavy duty,
yep,
trains, shipping,
three-wheelers,
transportation,
cars,
marine, the whole gamut of transportation.
All of it, yep.
Yeah,
yes,
good.
We do.
So, you know, I know we were talking about it. We're both kind of very focused on technology.
Yeah.
As you, today at least, the narrative is around one solution, right, electrifying, which may not apply to a few of these sectors. What are some of the technologies and some of the energy solutions that you see really promising, maybe even from today, but into the future?
Yeah, so I mean, that's right. You have to look at the sector, you have to understand the technology. So we do see electrification as sort of the best solution for the on-road sector for the most part, especially the cars, vans, buses, and trucks, and even into the heavy-duty trucks, we're even seeing the possibility of electrification. When you start getting into the sectors like shipping and aviation, there is, I think, where sort of the clean fuels are going to play a much larger role.
I know you're a chemical engineer, PhD chemical engineer, so I know you have a tremendous understanding of not only the traditional fuels, but the kind of the renewable fuels,
yep,
renewable diesel, sustainable aviation, perhaps renewable,
yeah,
propane, certainly renewable natural gas.
Yeah.
Are you happy with where those markets are going, and do you see a clear place for maybe zero carbon renewable fuels?
Yeah, I mean, we do a lot of work on fuels, and I think, you know, when you really get into the details around fuels, it's really important to look at the feedstock and where it's coming from. Some renewable fuels are actually going to be carbon neutral, and that's great. And then there's some renewable fuels that are not, and actually can be just as bad, if not worse, for the climate as burning fossil fuel. So it's really important to understand all of the climate impacts of renewable fuels. And then one of the things that we're looking for example, in the aviation sector, we're seeing, you've heard sustainable aviation fuels. Right now, those are mostly going to be made from renewable feedstocks. But in the future, we're looking into more the possibility of what they call e-fuels. So that is actually using clean electricity to make a fuel that could be a drop-in replacement for kerosene.
And I know your organization is international.
Mm-hmm.
You've got offices, I think, in, I see, Germany and Sao Paulo and Beijing and two in America.
Yeah.
I'm pretty familiar with what the U.S. government is doing to facilitate investments, DFI or RINs credits, mm-hmm, low carbon fuel standards. What are you seeing in the rest of the world? Is the rest of the world thinking about incentivizing the production of renewable fuels?
Yeah, so I say, again, you know, I think the fuels are going to be most important in sort of the shipping and aviation sectors. And if you look at the interesting approaches that Europe's taking versus the U.S., you can almost say it's a little bit of like a more of a stick approach in Europe, because they're essentially mandating ever-increasing blends of renewable fuels into the feedstock, whereas in the U.S., you know, with the IRA and other fiscal incentives, they're really like maybe it's more of a carrot approach, like putting a lot of money and investment into ensuring that those fuels are going to be there.
You see one approach maybe more successful than another?
It's still to be told. I mean, we're happy with any approach. I mean, we do believe, in the power of regulation. So we do want to make sure that, like, we have the certainty that we know that those fuels are going to be getting cleaner and cleaner, and the environmental impacts are going to be going down. But it's also really important, especially at this time where there's maybe, you know, more investment needed up front. If the government is able to invest, I think it's a great time to do it.
Yeah, good. You know, I'm going to talk a little bit about your research and some other emissions because I've studied it and it's really good. But our own research, and we've had a couple guests on the Path to Zero that talked about the value of hybrids. So the best of an electric powertrain matched to the best internal combustion engines, and then fueled, I think, by zero carbon, maybe negative carbon renewable fuels. Kind of in our work, that's seems to show sometimes the lowest cost for the lowest emissions. Have y'all studied much, and do you think much about how hybrids and renewables fit into the future?
Yeah, let me talk for the, this is an important point, and I want to kind of make sure I'm getting this quite clear. So we're in a situation where we know how much, you know, we need to reduce carbon to stay on track with the Paris climate targets. And
we being the world,
we being ICCT,
okay, yeah, okay.
But we, you know, this is public information. Yeah. There is sort of like a remaining carbon budget. And if you assume that transportation can sort of emit its fair share of that, so you need to look at things from a life cycle perspective when you're doing those kind of calculations. And when we calculate the life cycle, we look at all the different kinds of technologies out there. We might look at sort of a regular gasoline car, diesel car, a hybrid vehicle, a plug-in hybrid vehicle, or an electric vehicle. The electric vehicle is the only technology that electric vehicle powered by of course renewable electricity is the only technology that has the potential to actually get the reductions needed that are aligned with the Paris climate targets. So, you know, you can get some reductions from a hybrid, but you can't get anywhere near the reductions that you can get from electric vehicle on a life cycle basis. So that is
on a life cycle basis where the assumption is that the grid is 100% renewable.
Right. Well, actually, you know what? Even looking at the current grid. So right now, the grid is also a changing thing as well, right? So the grid is...
Yeah, because today, at least the U.S. grid's 60%
right.
So coal, natural gas.
What we would do is, like, so you say you buy a vehicle, it's going to be on the road for 15, 18, 20 years. We also know how, we have projections on how the grid is going to clean up and change in that time period. Mm-hmm. So if you buy a car today and you calculate just the emissions today, it might be one thing. But if you calculate the emissions over the entire life cycle of the vehicle, right, factoring in the fact that the grid is getting cleaner everywhere, even, I'll give you like the most extreme example, even in India, where they are use mostly coal, right, and their grid is much, much more carbon intensive than the grid in the United States. Even that, we find that the electric vehicle of all of those technologies that we just talked about on a life cycle basis is going to have the least carbon emissions.
Because you see in 15 years, even in India, that grid will be mostly from renewable fuels?
I don't know the exact number of the grid, but I don't have that off the top
of
my head.
But yeah, you see it dramatically.
It's cleaning up. It is. Yeah. And there's obviously like other agencies working on the in parallel. So like, you know, you have some government agencies working on cleaning up the cars themselves at the tailpipe. Right. And then you have other government agencies working on cleaning up the grid itself.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. We might come back to that.
Sure.
Let's talk, because I think the other thing, I know you've done a lot of research on things beyond carbon. You really studied two emissions that are kind of near and dear to me, because I feel like the conversation is so climate intensive, we forget to talk about health, where NOx in particular matter are killing our children, certainly impairing our health today. You want to talk to our listeners about kind of where you have, what you've studied and how you've seen the impacts of NOx or PM?
Yeah. So that's a great question, because I have actually been working on reducing diesel NOx and particulate matter for over 20 years. So it's something that it's the longest thing I've been working on, honestly, in transportation. And it's still an issue today. Although the technology exists, even if you have a diesel truck, the technology exists to make that emissions almost zero. It's amazing, actually, from a technical perspective. And you're correct. Like, diesel exhaust causes what we call premature mortality, premature death, and that's affecting hundreds of thousands of people a year. And that's just the tip of the iceberg. It also creates all sorts of other illnesses and health problems. And usually those issues are really concentrated in cities and urban areas. And you have these cities that are really trying to like deal with these issues. And so we have been working very closely with governments that want to put in place regulations to ensure that those tailpipe emissions are clean, not only in the laboratory, but actually when those right. vehicles are being driven in the real world. And that is the key.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, our own work, now I guess 24 emissions regulations in America finally got clear and kind of get a glimpse into 27. As we look into 2030, we still struggle with how that after treatment will work to provide NOx emissions that we think will be at the limits in 2030. So do you see a future for diesel past 27 or 2030 because of NOx emissions alone?
that's a good question. I mean, you know, the way I look at it is we're in this transition period, and it's difficult because you want to say like, we know that we're not going to snap our fingers and tomorrow, like all of the trucks on the road are going to be right. electric. That's not right. realistic. So we know there's going to be a transition. We do believe that that's eventually where we're going to end up, but it's going to take some time. So we also need to make sure that all the vehicles, all their internal combustion or diesel vehicles that are sold in that time frame have to be as clean as possible for public health reasons, because those vehicles, I mean, you know as well as I do, like diesel vehicles stay on the road for a really long time.
Right.
They have a much longer lifespan than gasoline vehicles, and so we have to make sure they're not clean, otherwise we're going to be paying for that for yeah. a long time.
A vehicle going on the road today certainly will be there yeah. likely 20 years.
Yes, exactly.
Maybe,
or more.
Maybe change hands one or two times or three yeah. times or five times, but yes. 20 years or more, yeah. you say. Yeah, they're durable if nothing else.
Yes, they are.
Hey, you've introduced a concept that I never had heard before, feebates, where governments impose a fee on vehicles. I know you talked a little bit about that in Europe. Are you seeing that anywhere else around? We're certainly not seeing that much here in the U.S., but are you seeing that generally outside of Europe as well?
That's a great question. There are, I think, some other governments who have tried to adopt that. I think Singapore comes to mind. I don't have the full list, but, you know, the thing that I want to stress about these feebate programs, which I think is really great, and I was mentioning to you earlier, in Europe they actually call it bonus malus, which I think is a kind of cooler name than feebate. But really what it is it's a way of giving fiscal incentives to consumers to purchase cleaner vehicles, but without having to use taxpayer money, because these programs can essentially be revenue neutral. If you want to purchase a big gas guzzler, you have to pay more for that privilege. If you want to purchase a clean car, you should get some rebate. So basically, the people who are buying the gas guzzlers are giving the rebates to the people that are buying the cleaner cars, so the government doesn't have to necessarily pay extra money for those kind of programs, which I think is pretty nice.
You know, I noticed this morning we're starting the conversation. I know you're in D.C. and really closer to policy and mm-hmm. some of those conversations. I see the rhetoric starting this morning about kind of the deficit and its growth. Do you kind of see more action like the Inflation Reduction Act? Do you see more of that coming, you think?
I mean, I think we are. What we've got, we had the infrastructure law first, the bipartisan infrastructure law, and then we had the Inflation Reduction Act. Those were two sort of like monumental bills that I've never seen anything like that in the time that I've been working here. And I mean, I think that we should consider how amazing and all of the different opportunities we're getting from those. I mean, that's just putting billions of dollars into clean technology in terms of infrastructure, in terms of like incentives for purchasing cleaner vehicles, everything. I mean, and that money is still going to be coming out for some time to come. So, I mean, I think we should be quite happy that yeah. we were able to pull that off.
Work that a little while yes. and then see. So as you think about your segments, we'll call it on-road transportation, freight, material handling, shipping, aviation, mm-hmm. maybe with those buckets. Any one segment seem easier to decarbonize than another? Do you see easier, quicker wins in any of those segments?
There are segments that are going to be more complicated and some that are going to be easier. You know, I think moving from the sort of lighter vehicle side, we kind of already have the technology. We know what it is. It's electric vehicles. People like them. The infrastructure is coming along. The costs are coming way, way, way down.
Sadly, they weren't horrendous polluters in that scope of.
Well,
but there are a lot of them.
They actually are in terms of greenhouse gas emissions, we're talking about climate change, light-duty vehicles are the largest. So that's actually really good. So now as you reduce the greenhouse gas emissions from cars and vans, you know, the next largest emitter is the trucks. And then you've got, like, the shipping and aviation, which are sort of on somewhat similar levels. And the, you know, the lighter trucks, still relatively easy to electrify. That's already happening. Sort of last mile delivery. You see Amazon buying, you know, all these electric trucks. You're probably starting to see these. Maybe even I just see some driving around town now. But then when you start getting into like the heavy duty long haul trucking, and then even further when you start getting into the shipping and aviation, it is more complicated. But finally, we do actually like have solutions there. We do actually have technological solutions that are actually being able to be implemented. So, you know, we need to, it's getting less about getting the technology, and it's getting more about like, how do we bring the cost down faster and how do we accelerate the deployment? So it's really kind of like that shift is starting to happen.
As you think about those really hard to decarbonize sectors, do you see hydrogen playing a role?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, obviously hydrogen can play a role in some places. The thing with hydrogen is that you need to have green hydrogen. So that means hydrogen produced from clean, renewable electricity. But when you look at producing hydrogen from clean, renewable electricity versus charging a battery from clean, renewable electricity, it's much, much, much more efficient to use that clean electricity to charge a battery than it is to make hydrogen. So you have to be very careful about only using hydrogen in areas where the battery is just not going to work.
And you're working in all of those areas,
yeah,
really trying to talk about it.
Yeah.
Generally, are the people that you work with, are they truck manufacturers? Are they the users like FedEx or UPS? Who belongs to your group?
Well, we always consider our main customers to be government regulators. That is our main theory of change, is that if you have strong, clear, technically sound, well done, well enforced, et cetera, regulations, that gives everyone the certainty that this technology is coming. It gives the industry the certainty to sort of invest in those technologies, and it sort of really like sets the clear pathway. So that's always like our first and foremost solution that we think, you know, just going back to what you asked me before about diesel NOx, the reason that the trucks have cleaned up, I mean, you must remember 20 years ago, you drive down the road, you're behind a long-haul truck, you see black smoke coming out the tailpipe. Now, I think if you saw black smoke coming out of a tailpipe of a truck, you would be like, this is shocking. I've never seen it, you know. And the reason for that is regulation. And that has saved hundreds and hundreds of thousands of lives by doing that. So we really need governments to set the path to how we're going to do this. And that's why we focus on that area.
Yeah. Well, yeah, certainly I see those charts for NOx emissions that, you know, they've just come down.
Yeah.
Looks like a 15-story building, you know, starting up high and now almost down to zero. Well done. You're here at Climate Week. You're here to give a talk. I think you gave a talk. And what talk to us about what you're doing at Climate Week.
Yeah, I've got a few things going on, but the one thing I want to draw your attention to is actually later today, we have a session with our one initiative called Accelerating to Zero. I know you have Path to Zero. There's many different, everyone's coming up with a different name for that, which is good, right? But what this initiative does, and ICT is proud to act as the secretariat for this initiative, is that we host what's called the ZEV Declaration. Now this is, it's got governments at all levels, national level, subnational, city level. It's got industry, auto manufacturers, suppliers, fleets, civil society, and they've all signed on to commit to going to 100% zero emission cars and vans by 2035 in the major markets and by 2040 globally. So it's kind of getting everyone to commit to this, and it's just like I said before, when you get these kind of high level commitments from enough people, you know, people start to realize like, okay, this is the direction that we're going, and so we want to really like highlight the commitments. But commitments are obviously not enough. So we are really going to spend this session looking into not only like what people are committing to, but what they're actually doing and how much they have done since they first committed to this at the COP26, which was in Glasgow a couple years ago.
Right. And at least we're beginning to get a little span of time where we can do a little bit better measurements.
Yeah.
Well, it's interesting. 1 year anniversary of the Inflation Reduction Act, starting to at least see some metrics.
Yep.
Clearly how much we spent, now we're kind of starting seeing how much we saved. Let's have a little bit of fun. We love to give you a magic wand and have a little magic. You get to use that magic wand to change one thing in the next year that in your mind would have the most beneficial impact in climate change. How would you use that wand?
I knew this question was coming, and you know, it's kind of like, do I go big or do I go small? And I mean, you know,
always
I mean,
go big.
Yeah, it is a magic wand after all. So you know, I mean, the bottom line is, I mean, I've been working on climate health for so long, and we know that the primary cause of climate change is burning fossil fuels. So if I have my magic wand, we just got to get rid of all the fossil fuels out there.
Yeah. And do you feel like transportation would be able to continue if you did that?
Yeah. I mean, we have the technologies. I mean, who's to say what would actually happen if we did that? But I would love to find out. But, you know, the thing is that we are at the point where we do have the technologies. So that would really, like, make us deploy them quite a lot faster, right?
Good. Could use your wand. Well, another tradition we have is that we love to plant a tree in your honor for your time spent with us and just kind of the information you share with us. Any national forest around this country that you'd love to see a tree planted?
Yeah. My favorite park, I don't know if it's a national forest, though. I think it's a national park, and I'm not sure if they let you do that,
too. Works.
Okay. Do you know Rock Creek Park
in
D.C.?
Yeah.
I just love it because it's just, you know, I love those sort of oases in the middle of
you might
cities.
Drive or bike or run by it every day.
Yes.
Lovely place.
It's beautiful.
I think we can arrange that,
okay.
So that's good.
Great, thank
Anything
you.
Else that we haven't asked you, haven't talked about that you'd love to maybe share?
That's a great question. I mean, you know, one thing that we're really sort of focused on right now, and so I'm assuming you're a lot of your audience is in the U.S., is that there's, you know, these two really important regulations that the EPA is working on right now, and that will be to really drive cleaner cars and cleaner trucks out all the way through 2032. And this will be sort of one of the, if these are able to go through, they'll be sort of some of the biggest regulations we've ever seen that will sort of drive electrification in those segments. And I think, you know, I don't know how much your sort of viewers are paying attention to that, but I think these are going to be some really monumental regulations, assuming they can get through.
And that's across all vehicles, right? Light
mm-hmm.
duty.
Yeah.
You know, we never really talk about trains. What's going on with the railroads?
We don't talk about trains because from at least a climate perspective, we always say follow the tons. Trains are already quite efficient, so we don't, if you look at the actual like tons of emissions coming out of trains, it's a smaller piece of the pie. That being said, you know, the locomotive engines that are being used today are pretty old and pretty dirty, and you know, they have a pretty good stockpile of locomotive engines, that so they don't need to really be buying new clean engines. So I do think, you know, we need to pay more attention to trains. We've actually started to ramp up our work in that area, and I think it would be, you know, I think it's a really, really important topic, not only for climate, but really for health, because the trains emissions are pretty significant.
Well, Dr. Rachel Moncrief, we just love you being here. Glad you're in New York and, you know, working with a group here for Climate Week. Thanks for coming to Path to Zero.
Thanks for having me, Tucker.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to a special edition of Path to Zero with Tucker Perkins from Climate Week in New York City. If you like what you've heard, subscribe and rate us on your favorite podcast app. You can email us with questions or comments to pathtozero@propane.com.